Hi, and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos, or send to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. You know, these Q&A videos, I usually give a little intro on some exciting things that are happening, and I mentioned last week that there is a special project I've been working on that is soon to come out, and it is coming out now, and that is a new podcast that I have started along with a friend and a compatriot of mine, Ruth McLeod, who is a sociologist by training and an atheist by inclination. She and I are doing this podcast together. It is the Sensibly Speaking Podcast. It is available at sensiblyspeaking.com. There's a website there, and the first podcast is now up and accessible. It is an hour-long weekly show where we talk about secular and humanist and skeptical issues and critical thinking. Of course, I bring my, you know, perspective to it as an ex-cult member and not an atheist, but I'm, of course, not labeled as anything, really, in terms of any religious inclination. Between Ruth and I think we'll have some interesting points of agreement and maybe some points of disagreement. And I think that'll be the basis of some good conversation and good listening for you guys. I will not be specifically using the podcast to talk about Scientology specifically, but I'm sure it will come up from time to time. My YouTube channel, of course, will continue, and I will continue posting every week here. The podcast is something I'm doing in addition to this, and I'm very, very excited about it, and I hope you guys check it out. Right now, it is not yet available on iTunes. We literally just got it up and running in the last couple days, and it is up on iTunes for approval right now, and as soon as it's available on iTunes for subscription there, I will let everybody know. For now, you can subscribe to the podcast via the sensiblyspeaking.com website, whether you do or don't use iTunes or not for podcasts, and you can download the podcast from there. Our first one is up and available. So, with that now having been announced, very exciting news, we will get on with your questions. Annie A. I have a question about Scientology buzzwords and how they are used as a PR strategy, especially by celebrities in Scientology. The first is the word bigot. When John Sweeney was investigating Scientology, Tommy Davis kept calling him a bigot over and over again. He sounded like a broken record. When Leah Remini left Scientology, Kirstie Alley went on The Howard Stern Show and said she no longer associates with Remini, not because she left, but because she's a bigot for criticizing Scientology. If there's a news report featuring an ex-Scientologist, the news broadcasters have to read parts of these long rebuttals which almost always accuse the critic of being a bigot. It's as if they intentionally say this word over and over again to suggest that any person who looks at Scientology critically or questions its intentions is actually a bigot. And decent people should despise bigots, right? The other buzzword is religion. When I think about it, most people don't usually refer to their faith, whatever it may be, as their religion. They might say my faith or my belief system, but not necessarily my religion. Yet Tom Cruise always speaks of Scientology by saying my religion. Tommy Davis accused Sweeney of being a bigot by attacking his religion. I guess I'm just wondering if the constant use of these words as a defense mechanism is some sort of tactic or PR strategy for getting the public, especially those who don't really know or care much about Scientology, to assume that anyone who comments negatively about the Church of Scientology is a bigot who also hates religion. If you have any insight, I'd love to hear it. Thanks. Yeah, there's a lot actually on this. It is definitely, no question about it, a PR strategy. The Church of Scientology since the late 60s has been desperately seeking approval as a religion, and of course they got it in 1993 when they got their tax exemption from the IRS as a tax-exempt religious organization. But they continue to use this because they have to emphasize their religious nature due to the fact that in court they have to have good grounds, good justification for standing behind the First Amendment and using it as a shield. In fact, not just a shield, but as my good friend Jeffrey Augustine has put it, they have weaponized the First Amendment and use it to abuse the Sea Org members and to a lesser degree the Scientology staff members with, you know, no pay, no need to pay minimum wage, no health insurance, all sorts of things that they can basically use the First Amendment and their religious status to justify their horrific abuses of their own staff. And it really just goes to, it's because they're a dangerous cult. They're not a religion. And there is a difference. You know, they don't use the words my faith or belief system or my belief system because that's not what Scientology is. Scientologists themselves don't refer to Scientology as my faith or my belief system because that's not how they think of Scientology. They have to use the word religion because it's not a faith-based system or a belief system. They look at it as a set of methods and techniques that produce a specific result, the result being, of course, personal spiritual freedom and immortality, if only. So they use the word religion, and yes, this is definitely part of a dedicated PR campaign that's been going on for many, many years and will continue to be that way. And since they have to position themselves as a religion in order to gain that First Amendment protection, then they get to use the word bigot, which reinforces that religious argument for anybody who dares to criticize or speak out against the church's toxic practices or abusive behavior towards its members or ex-members. This is just PR 101. I mean, this really isn't, and you seeing through it is a good sign. Unfortunately, when you trot out words like religion and bigot, those are hot topic key words for some people. And as soon as you say those words, they instantly react and will side with Scientology or at least give Scientology the benefit of the doubt, which it does not deserve. The evidence against Scientology and its abusive practices is crystal clear and really not up for question. The testimonials and the actual proof of it and the pseudoscience of it, you know, as I've covered with the Purification Rundown, for example, it's abundantly clear that this thing is nothing but a money-making scam. And they can throw the word religion around as much as they want. That doesn't mean that they deserve any degree of credibility whatsoever. They do not stand on par with any of the good works that are done in the name of religion through, say, the Catholic Church or the Christian Church. You know, you say what you will about those groups, and I've got plenty to say about them in terms of organized religion, but there is good done by them, a lot of good done by them. With the Church of Scientology, you do not have an equal scale balance there. You have a money-making scam, which is bankrupting and ruining people's lives, and a very thin facade of legitimacy that they shouldn't really be given. Gary Leloux. Hey Chris, love the videos. I understand that symbols and icons are used by cults, and many other organizations for that matter, to help the member identify him or herself with the organization they belong to. Either it be the military, church, or Scientology symbols and icons can describe so much about that organization without saying a word. So here's my question. What does the odd-looking cross and the triangles mean? Is the intended effect of the cross used as a way to give the impression to non-Scientology members a feeling that the organization is benign and Christian-oriented? Okay, well, let's talk about these symbols. I'll throw them up on the screen as I go over some of these. The Scientology cross is an 8-pointed cross. Hubbard ripped it off from some older group, I think he mentions in one lecture back in Phoenix, Arizona, back in 53 or 54, that it was taken from a cross that was dug up, you know, out in the desert of Phoenix or something. The point of the cross, of course, using the symbol of the cross, is to legitimize Scientology as a religion, which Hubbard started working on in 54 when he made it a church. And the point of having a cross that has 8 points on it is Hubbard aligned that with his concept of the eight dynamics, which in Scientology is an idea that life is about survival, that the dynamic principle of existence is to survive. And that principle, that dynamic urge, can be divided into eight parts, which start with the individual himself, which is the first dynamic. That is the urge to survive as oneself. Then there's the urge to survive as a family through sex and by raising children, and that is called the second dynamic in Scientology. Then there is the urge to survive as or through groups, and that is called the third dynamic in Scientology. And as you can see, it's sort of a concentric circle of influence sort of system where you start as an individual, family, groups, then the fourth dynamic is mankind as a whole, the fifth dynamic is all life, animal kingdom, insects, you know, any life anywhere is considered the fifth dynamic. The sixth dynamic is matter, energy, space, or time, and time, sorry, messed. The solid things, the rest of the universe, again, concentric circles expanding out. The seventh dynamic is the urge to survive as a spiritual being or as spirits, and includes all spiritual beings or all spiritual manifestations. And finally, the eighth dynamic, which is called the infinity dynamic or the God dynamic, and is the urge to survive through the creator or through the concept of infinity. Hubbard said that the eighth dynamic won't fully be understood until one has fully embraced and realized all of the first seven dynamics. And another, one of the go buttons with going to up the bridge to OT is that you will understand and come to a full awareness of all of these dynamics. So this is a very strong concept in Scientology. It's used often. People talk about it all the time in Scientology. And there's all kinds of, slang use of these words. You know, your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your husband or your wife is referred to as your 2D. You know, this is my 2D in Scientology. That's how they say that. They don't necessarily refer to their jobs as their 3D. Interestingly enough, they just call them their jobs. But they could, you know, this kind of thing. Or what are you doing on the 4D? Or what are you doing on the fourth dynamic? Or what are you doing for the fourth dynamic? Meaning all of mankind, right? And this is a go button that they use in Scientology to get people to donate money or join the Sea Organization and things like that, as they push that, you know, duty and survival on the fourth dynamic. And anyway, those are the dynamics, and the cross has 8 points to represent each of those dynamics. So, the S and double triangles. There are two triangles in Scientology that are pretty important. The top triangle is the one that's actually referred to and known less about in Scientology, and it is called the KRC triangle. K stands for knowledge, R stands for responsibility, C stands for control. So you have a triangle of knowledge, responsibility, and control. And the reason it's a triangle, and this is actually pretty clever on Han Hubbard's part, is that if you consider the triangle as sort of a philosophical symbol or instrument, what you have is the concept of, if you increase one's knowledge, let's say, one corner of the triangle, then you automatically increase the other two. In other words, if you learn more, gain more knowledge, then you are automatically a bit more responsible and a bit more able to control maybe your environment or the subject that you've learned about, something like that, right? Also, you could increase your responsibility in an area simply by deciding to do so. I don't really know any other way to increase responsibility. But automatically by doing so, you would increase your knowledge and you would increase your control of that area or of that sphere or of activity. Now, that gets a bit esoteric for me and actually pretty unworkable, because you don't increase your knowledge by any other way except by learning more. So you can sit there and decide to be more responsible for something And maybe potentially you could learn more about it as a result of that, because you'd be putting your attention on it and being more aware of it. But in Scientology, they actually believe that just because you've decided to increase your responsibility for something, you automatically know more about it, which I think is pretty demonstrably untrue. Or, and with that third corner, you would increase your control of it, right? You could actually control it better. And in Scientology, control is the ability to start, change, and stop something. Boy, I'm just really throwing out all the Scientologies today. So again, according to this principle, if you work at, you know, starting, changing, and stopping something, then you're automatically being more responsible for it. And again, you're automatically knowing more about the thing. So, you know, in principle, there is some workability to this triangle concept and to this KRC triangle. Hubbard says that this particular triangle is really important for executives and, you know, leadership and things like that. And so it's the top triangle. The bottom triangle is the ARC triangle. And A stands for affinity, R stands for reality, and C stands for communication. This is a much more broadly used and understood triangle in Scientology. People, every single Scientologist knows about this or learns about it very quickly when they get into Scientology. ARC is supposed to total, the triangle works in the same way. You know, you increase one corner, you automatically increase the other two. So again, there's examples where this is workable and where it makes sense. And there's plenty of examples where it's unworkable and it doesn't make any damn sense at all. But Hubbard puts this out as a universal principle that is always true. If you increase affinity, in other words, how much you like something, affinity is how much you like something, how much you want to be close to something. If you increase affinity for, let's say, somebody else, then they become more real to you, reality, and you're more able to communicate with them. And the communication becomes better as a result of that, right? And ARC, the ARC triangle, is used constantly in Scientology. And by understanding, I mean that if you increase your affinity, reality, and communication for something, you will understand it more. Again, there's plenty of examples where that is true and plenty of examples where that isn't true, but in Scientology, they focus on all the times when it is true. So that S and double triangle is symbolic of those two triangles, those two concepts, and of course Scientology is supposed to give you the ultimate as you progress through Scientology in knowledge, responsibility, and control, and affinity, reality, and communication, or understanding. So those are the two most key symbols in Scientology. There are other ones, but that's all I'm going to talk about today. Kristen Keller. Hi Chris, love your videos. I'm currently expecting my second baby and was curious about Scientology births. I've heard that they are to be silent, but given Scientology's views on pharmacology, do women go medication-free as well? Do touch assists play a role? Just curious, thanks. Silent births in Scientology are a big deal because of what it says in Dianetics, but as far as medications go, it's totally up to the individual. Scientology doesn't have any particularly draconian policies regarding medications, they in regards to birth at least. So it's kind of up to a mother's choice as to whether she wants to be medicated or not. And as far as I recall, most were, because as I understand it, birth is a pretty painful process, and women tend to, you know, go for the medication because it helps with the process. And sometimes, of course, it's absolutely 100% necessary. I would imagine, you know, in a C-section or something like that. No expert, but that's my understanding of it. Touch assist definitely would play a role, not necessarily during a birth. During the birth, you're just, you know, giving birth. But before and after, for pains or aches or things like that, Scientologists would definitely do touch assists or other kinds of assists. And in fact, there's an entire little body of work called a pregnancy assist that they do in Scientology, which is not just a laying on of hands kind of assist, but is an actual auditing assist that's done. So there's a lot about pregnancy and stuff in Scientology, or a little body of knowledge about it. You know, how practical it is or useful it is, I don't know, because I've never been a woman who's given birth and I've never used those principles, so I can't speak for their efficacy. Peter Walsh. Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for the amazing videos. The info you have given us is something we would probably never have ever heard about living across the pond over here in Ireland. There is a Scientology office here. About 20 years ago, me and a couple of my friends went in purely to have a bit of a laugh with them. We never really had any big interest in signing up. My question, though, is us, Ireland, being a small nation and having a very diverse beliefs on religion, life in general, and that the very same Scientology office has completely shrunk to a minuscule room, has Scientology really an interest in the smaller countries like ourselves, or is it really just taking a bullet for the cause to show a presence over here and stand firm with the organization? All right, well, the reason that you have an office over in Ireland is because L. Ron Hubbard personally actually set that up over there in Ireland. I don't know if it's in that location, but he did set up Ireland very early on in Scientology's history, and he developed a lot of the beginning introductory services that, or the way to introduce people into Scientology. He started working over in Ireland. He called it the Personal Efficiency Foundation, or the personal, and he developed what was called the Personal Efficiency Course. And this was kind of a big deal back then, because it was the way that they were going to get, you know, everybody into Scientology. And I think it's actually for exactly the reasons you listed that he went to Ireland, because there is diversity there, and because it is a small country there, I think he thought that it would be more accepting of Scientology as a new religion. And I think that he had the idea that it might be, if it caught on, that it would be something that he could, you know, take over the whole country. I think Hubbard was kind of into that early on. He was going, you know, he was reaching big. And of course, you know, in later years, he went down to Rhodesia and tried to do the same thing, take over the whole country, you know, sort of thing. So it wasn't beyond his way of thinking to do something like that. The reason why they haven't just shut down the office is because one of the other Hubbard policies is that you never, ever close a Scientology church for any reason. And I think that, you know, there have been missions, there have been franchises that have closed, but as far as Scientology organizations go, what we call the Class 5 orgs, or the local churches, they really, really work to keep those things open, even if it's only two people in them. I think Birmingham one time got down to like two or three people until it got some life, you know, resuscitated into it. So they'll keep those doors open, you know, they'll do anything they need to in order to keep them going. And that's why there's still a presence there. Kath T. Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for these videos. I wonder if you don't mind saying, do you feel anything inside yourself when you say that you've been declared? Does it still feel shameful inside, even though in your logical, enlightened self, you know that the problem is with the church, and it's only because you are a good person that you were declared? I thought to ask when you mentioned in this video that you'd been declared. Thanks again. I hope many people are staying away or getting out of Scientology because of you. Well, I don't know that I ever felt ashamed of being declared a suppressive person by Scientology. I think I expressed that it was actually a bit of a relief at the time that it happened, because it was a bit of a monkey off my back, because now I didn't have Scientology, like, you know, on me. But as far as how I feel about it now, looking back on it, I really feel a kind of a sadness about it, because it's such a shame on them that they treat their members and their ex-members so poorly, so badly. And I feel a little sad for some of the loss of old friends, old connections that I had. But that's really about all I feel about it. There's no shame or blame connected with it against me, and I don't feel upset about it. Failed Teacher 1. Are we all capable of being taken in by snake oil salesmen? I wonder if that is entirely true. Stanley Milgram's behavioral therapy hoax experiments in the early 1960s seem to show that about 70% of us don't want to cause trouble and will basically do what we are told. We bow to the group dynamic, we go with the flow, even if we don't like it. However, the other 30% of us are unreformed, stubborn skeptics, apparently. So, I am afraid I disagree. There are an awful lot of independent free thinkers out there, graduates of the School of Hard Knocks and the University of Life, who apply a common sense approach of most all things and sick their dogs on any snake oil salesperson who is unfortunate enough to knock on their front doors. Having said all that, I am beyond doubt the most gullible fool on the planet. Well, here's the thing about that. Anybody can be fooled or taken in by a snake oil salesman. There isn't anybody who's immune to this. Human beings are what we are. We have our biases, we have our opinions, we have our attitudes based on our upbringing, our culture. It's, you know, all the influences that make us who we are. There isn't any human being in the world who hasn't been fooled from time to time or taken in by somebody. Now, it's all just a matter of degree. And to think that you're above, you know, being fooled because you've had a couple of experiences in life is foolhardy at best. However, critical thinking and logic and reason and life experiences do harden a person up so that they're harder to fool. And that's, you know, what I like to impart or put across to people, because if you make it harder for the snake oil salesmen to do their work, then they'll move on to easier marks. And as we all know, there are some very easy marks out there. There are people who are so gullible that they will fall for just about anything. And I would like to see the world not be that way. And I think the only way to do it is education and, you know, raising awareness about the snake oil salesman. But I think it would be a bit reckless and unrealistic to think that there are people out there who just can't be fooled. It's not true. Rafaela Hosbein. Did you happen to see the video that Tony Ortega posted on his blog, the one with Jenna Elfman and her husband? Considering the content in that video, do you think they will be in trouble with the church, or do you think that was planned by David Miscavige to show that Scientologists are just normal people? The video blog that's being done by the Elfmans has been around since 2011 or 2012, and they've done, I don't know, about 30 episodes or so. I don't think that it's something that David Miscavige put them up to, and I think the fact that the latest episode that they did about a month ago got them so much notoriety on Tony Ortega's blog that I think that they probably got in maybe a little bit of trouble over the fact that it ended up on Tony Ortega's blog more so than because of what Jenna Elfman was talking about in some of the rather crude ways she was describing certain things she would do with a horse in order to watch Netflix all day. So, you know, whatever she has to say is, you know, really of no interest to me. But as far as her getting in trouble with the church, that would be why she would get in trouble for bringing bad PR or reflecting badly on the church, not because of what she's, you know, saying or doing particularly. You know, if what she's saying or doing is reflecting positively on the church, then they'll get a pat on the back and a commend and you know, an attaboy. So it's all just, you know, sort of up to the, you know, whim of David Miscavige as to how they're going to be treated. You can't really tell, you know, how that's going to go down. And so we've come to the end of another critical Q&A episode. Thank you very much for being part of this, for tuning in and listening to what I have to say. Your questions are wonderful, and I want you to keep giving them to me. And I'd also like to know what you think about my answers. You know, if you have any feedback or comments about anything that I've said here, please leave it in the comments section. I want to see it. And I'd like to have, you know, discussions about it, so feel free. I also hope that you do check out the new podcast that Ruth and I are doing, the Sensibly Speaking podcast, which is at sensiblyspeaking.com. And, you know, check it out. Have fun with that. And if you feel that you're getting value out of my channel and the things that I'm putting up here, you know, please consider throwing me some support using my Patreon campaign or the blue support buttons or PayPal links on my channel. Thank you very much for watching, and I look forward to seeing you next week.